Attention, this is not legal advice. If you are experiencing a legal emergency, contact an attorney or your local public defender's office.
The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Gin and Justice.
About justice.
Hey, I'm Justine.
And I'm Amanda.
Welcome to another episode of Gin and Justice.
Woo!
That's just a thing now. That's just a thing we say. Welcome, Gavel Gang. I know we voted on that a while ago.
And then we never said it ever again.
we urged you guys to vote, and we were like so encouraging is the word I'm going to use, / persistent, / harassing you guys. To vote, and then you guys voted, and then we never said it again. So there's that.
Gavel Gang.
Yeah. So I know last week we talked about the wrongful conviction day, and we encouraged everybody to donate or reach out to your local innocence chapter to see what you can do or what you can donate. And we are happy to announce that
the Innocence Project met their goal.
They did. So,
yeah, so cool.
That's really cool. They're a really great organization. Me too.
Made me happy.
Yes. Yeah. You can sign up for their email list too, so you can kind of get really major updates. They really don't email a lot.
Mm-mm.
So,
and it's always interesting, whatever they're sending you.
Every time.
Another email I got was not so good.
Uh-oh.
Florida executed somebody yesterday.
I did hear that. That Michael guy's Zach. Story is super heartbreaking. I think we may have touched on it. A few weeks ago when I got the email from the Florida alternative.
Yeah, he was like super abused, penalty. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like extremely,
you know,
like kind of reminded me. It reminded me of, do you remember that story that was really popular back when we were younger called A Child Called It?
Mm-hmm.
And
is it a Stephen King story?
No, that's a real memoir.
Oh.
Yes. And super heartbreaking. Anyways, that's basically what this dude's childhood was like. So, interestingly enough, I actually read yesterday that somebody on death row in Florida that had been convicted of killing, I think, a police officer and perhaps two people. He was on death row for about 40 years, and he died on death row, but not by the death penalty.
Haha.
So, which is pretty...
I don't know why I had that reaction.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's just like...
Gotcha state. You wanted to kill me so bad, so I went ahead and died before you could.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, 40 years in a Florida prison. In any prison, but yeah. So, I did want to follow up. We had talked about, I believe it was the state of Illinois, had been the first state to enact a no cash bail system, which they are kind of in the beginning stages of. Los Angeles just enacted a zero bail system for nonviolent offenders. So essentially, it sounds like nonviolent offenders are now going to be released without any type of bail after they are arrested and processed. So they, I'm sure, get ranked on, you know, whether it's a violent crime or what. Well, it does actually say nonviolent offenders specifically. So it's interesting, though, because the article I'm reading, as it's describing it, really separates it into two camps, and they put quote unquote progressive. I'm putting the quote unquote. The article didn't. It says progressives argued this kept poor people incarcerated while the wealthy could pay to stay out of jail. It's not an argument. That's just facts.
Yeah, it's not like an opinion.
That's just like a thing.
They didn't make that up. It's not a progressive idea.
It's not a progressive idea or argument. That's just a real thing. So. Anyways, well, on the other camp, residents and police officials, that's the other camp. They're concerned because crime victims are losing faith in the system if people are being released, even though it just said nonviolent offenders, but, you know. And then the sheriff says, is he a sheriff? Yeah, Sheriff Robert Luna said he understands the need to respect constitutional rights of arrestees, but said zero bail can demoralize deputies and police officers who work hard to make arrests, only to watch the offender walk away with a citation as the victim looks on in disbelief.
Okay. There's so many problems with that statement.
Right. Let's talk about the how officers shouldn't become personally invested.
Right. Like, that's not your job. And the person that you're arresting, whether they get out of jail or not, is still going to have to deal with that arrest and go to court right. and fucking deal with the consequences of their actions.
Just because you arrest someone doesn't make them guilty. They're right. innocent until proven guilty. That's
and even if they
standard.
Are guilty, if you have money, that should be able to get you out of jail. But if you're poor, it doesn't.
I think it's because they already recognize and don't even realize they're making the argument for us that it's really only certain classes of people who get arrested. So mm-hmm. they don't even think of that argument because they already know that.
Mm-hmm.
So
don't get wild. You might sound like you have progressive ideas.
I know. Well, apparently so does rapper Curtis Jackson, a.k.a. 50 Cent.
Mm.
He spoke out earlier this year about the policy. This is quoting from the article, saying the city is, quote, finished with zero bail. I don't know what that means, and it doesn't go on any further. I don't know. That's all it says about what 50 Cent says.
All right.
So that is what 50 Cent has to say.
Why would they even quote him?
I don't know. City is finished with zero bail. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know. There is a link, I think. Let me see. Oh, okay. Here we go. Wow, he looks old.
He is old.
So it just linked to another article. I'll send both of these to be put in the show notes. In July, rapper Curtis 50 Cent Jackson said LA is finished after it reinstated a zero bail policy. Watch how bad it gets out there. That's what he says. Okay, so now we know which camp he's in. He's in the residents and police officials camp.
Probably because he's rich and if he gets arrested, he can get out of jail. So.
Listen, he been shot 9 times, okay? Oh, man. Okay, so anyways, so that's cool. Portions of the country are moving towards zero bail. Again, this isn't a...
And it's for nonviolent crimes.
Also, it is like technically, quote, a get out of jail free card. However, like they still have these charges. I'm just doing quotes over and over again. They still have these charges pending. So it's really not. So like,
it's still going to ruin your life because it's going to be on your record forever in every background check ever.
Like if you end up being guilty of it and you have to serve time, like you have to go in at that time. And you have to, like, turn yourself in or be taken into custody when you lose a trial or whatever. So
that's when you pay for...
Right. For your nonviolent crime.
What the fuck?
I will say, I was talking with a friend of mine that's a detective yesterday. And we have very different opinions on several issues, which we know. And I think he, like, trolls me. Actually, I'm certain that he does. He's telling me he's, like, moving back to the narcotics unit. And I said, oh, that's cool that they're spending trillions of dollars on the failed drug war and they're still just contributing to mass incarceration. And he wrote back, oh, if only people would stop selling them. And I was like, oh, yeah, if only we could control the demand side. You know, simple economics says if we control the demand side, there will not be a supply, right? Supply, demand equals supply. So if there's a large demand, there's a large supply. That's just how it goes. And then he like joked about how it's part of his system of mass incarceration right back at me. And I was like, I think you're trolling me. But yeah, we do have a problem with mass incarceration. It's a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think that is a criminal justice issue. We can get a lot of people to agree to no matter which, whether they're in the progressive camp or the community and police official camp.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. I don't know. Yeah.
Speaking of the world burning.
Yes. And all of these issues being intertwined.
Our interview.
Our interview this week. We're so excited because we have our friends from Dream Corps back.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it's not Dream Corps Justice.
Nope.
This time it is Green for All. which initially I was like, what does this have to do with criminal justice?
Exactly.
And what is this going to be about? And then what a mind-blowing interview.
Mm-hmm. Everything is connected, truly.
It really is.
She is the chief strategy officer for Dream.org. She is a campaign and communications strategist with a decade of experience working to expand educational and economic opportunities for people of color.
Yeah, and she definitely expanded my mind.
Definitely.
Because I'm all for climate change, but, you know, obviously we're Gin and Justice. So initially, like I said, I was like, what does this have to do with criminal justice? But she connected the dots.
Mm-hmm. She sure did.
Like immediately. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, this is perfect.
It made perfect sense.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, we're going to talk about climate change on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, even if it wasn't justice related, the world is burning. So we should probably do something about it. So
that's true. I would really love to get Greta on here.
Oh, yeah.
She's just very fiery and I love her.
Yeah, she's a badass.
It's not a lot of people that are younger than me that I have respect for.
But we have a tremendous amount of respect for Michelle.
We do.
She's awesome.
Bringing me right back.
Trying.
We do. No, Michelle was awesome and we are so excited to bring you her interview today. And this should really fire you up. One of the things that she kind of harps on that I really, really loved is you can do even the smallest thing. The smallest thing. There are so many organizations out there. You could do a beach walk and clean up plastic that you're finding along the way. I mean, there's like so many, you can reach out to your community and see what they're doing about their climate issues. So there is something for everybody in every schedule, in every income level.
Yeah.
Every passion level. And she really did reassure my faith because we recorded this right after that debate with that guy who said that climate change was a hoax or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Something as ridiculous.
He did say it's a hoax.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the exact words, but so anyways, we're so excited to bring you this week's guest. All rise for Michelle Romero. All right, guys, this week we are here with another friend from Dream Corps. This is the Green for All section, so this is a first. So this week we have Michelle Romero. Welcome. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. We're so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I know I was listening to the last show with Sean Wilson talking about our justice work, and there's a lot that we're working on, so I'm excited to talk about how the green economy connects to formerly incarcerated folks in the prison system, too.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're excited to hear how all of this intertwines. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, look, I'm the chief strategy officer at Dream.org. And for the past several years, I've worked on our Green for All program, which works to build an inclusive green economy, strong enough to lift people out of poverty. I'll say I came into the environmental work very much as someone who was working on social justice and cared about racial and economic justice. I was an organizer in college on working on access to higher education. After that, I worked on voting rights issues and things like that. So I care deeply about racial and economic justice, but I will say when I made the pivot into the environmental work, I was not sure. I kind of saw it as a Latina myself, right? As something that was maybe for white hippie tree huggers. not going to lie. I was working in Berkeley, California at the time, and quite literally there were folks at UC Berkeley on campus protesting the cutting down of a tree. And so, you know, between that and the postcards you see of like save the whales and polar bears, that's very much the view of environmental issues that I had. But I was recruited to come and work at the Green for All Initiative with Dream.org by a friend of mine and Vien. And she was someone who really was passionate about social and economic justice. And so I knew that whatever she was up to, there had to be more to it. And sure enough, you know, the Green for All Initiative really does work at the intersection of the environment, the economy, and race. recognizing that, you know, pollution and poverty actually disproportionately affect folks of color. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something new that's become recognized, you know, over the last decade, whereas mass incarceration, immigration reform, you know, some of these other issues, voting rights, are kind of traditional civil rights issues, right? Mm-hmm. Climate justice and climate change, like, this is a new civil rights issue, but it is like a civil rights social justice issue.
Yeah, it is interesting how it is all connected. And
everything's connected.
Really start digging deep, it's like, it kind of just makes you mad because it's you start seeing how everything is connected. So yeah, very, very interesting. Well, I like how you are able to like look back and recognize like these were my biases with climate justice.
Totally.
This is how I got into this.
When I accepted the job, I actually told her, look, I'm going to come because I believe in you and I want to help you achieve your vision. And I said, but I can't guarantee that I'm going to be as passionate as you about these environmental issues. I really got to find out for myself. And you know what I'll say changed my mind was that she sent me to work in Flint, Michigan at the time of the Flint water crisis. Not to say that it's solved now, but this was
2016. I was going to say, did we do something about it?
This was 2016, though. So kind of the height of, you know, folks really – all
finding
the
out about it. It,
right? Yeah. And I, you know, had a chance to sit with moms who were just trying to raise their kids. And like, you know, one of them, Denitra Brown, talked about how she tried to rinse her son in the bath water. And this, of course, was after they knew they shouldn't drink the water. But lead shouldn't really cause like issues on your skin. And so he was 3 years old. It's potty training age, right? He had a PP accident. And she just tried to rinse him real quick. And within seconds, he was saying, you know, mommy, my skin is cracking and bleeding. And she pulls him out of the water. And sure enough, his skin, he said it was burning. She pulled him out of the water and saw that his skin was cracking and bleeding. And it was that moment that I was sitting there facing these residents and realizing this is a poor community. You know, it was actually about half and half, you know, Black and white. But they were low income folks. They were working class, you know, families. And it was that moment that just sort of had recalled a memory of mine when I was back in California in the Bay Area and watching the news, maybe just 2-3 years prior to that. And on the news, they were reporting that there had been another Chevron oil refinery explosion. And so the residents of Richmond, California, another low income working class, you know, diverse sort of community, that the residents needed to get inside and they needed to close their doors and windows. They needed to get towels or blankets, sheets of any kind, and shove them in the cracks of their doors and windows because the air outside was that, you know, bad to breathe. And sure enough, you know, at that time, that particular oil refinery incident caused tens of thousands of people to go to the hospital. But I had a friend who lived there. And I remember calling her when it happened and watching it on the news. And I said, Blanca, oh my God, are you seeing what's happening? Are you inside? Are you safe? And she laughed at me. And I didn't really process it then until I was in Flint. But she laughed at me because she said, Michelle, I've grown up here my whole life. You know, when things like that happen, those were the words that I think stuck with me. When things like that happen, she says, the city has an alarm system that goes off to tell us that we need to get inside. And sitting there in Flint, again, years, you know, 18 months, I think at that point, had gone by with this Flint water crisis where the water was poisoned with lead and just so toxic. No one could drink water. No one had water to cook, bathe, drink, I mean, wash dishes, nothing, right? And I realized that shit is normal. Like that kind of way of living has become normal for too many communities in the United States.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that for me is where I found, you know, my fire, that it can't be that way. We can't have haves and have nots. We can't have some communities that get the opportunity that, you know, the American dream is for some people, right? While we then have throwaway communities, people we can discard, sacrifice areas.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually watched a documentary. I can't remember what it was.
It was What the Health, because you made me watch it too. And they were talking about I think it was What the Health. It was one of the ones you made me watch. And they were talking about the poor communities and the Black and brown communities that were forced to live in these farming industries. And the ground is like toxic. And they were like getting cancer and stuff from the farm runoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even think it was that one. I remember it was pretty recent, a documentary that I had watched about the microplastics in, I want to say it was focused on like a community in Texas. And it was a lower income community, and it was like a plastic factory that had come from overseas, and they particularly picked that and negotiated with the state of Texas to place it in a lower income community, and the microplastics that were coming from the factory were causing all sorts of health issues. And that was kind of like my first realization of that, what was going on. So,
yeah.
So disturbing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's something about this othering that happens, right? Where it's not in our backyard, so we don't have to know about it, care about it, think about it, right?
100%.
And, you know, climate change, I think, is one of those issues that challenges the logic behind othering, you know, because climate change, you know, becomes such an issue that affects everyone. But by the time it's affecting you, right, it's like late. It's late to do anything about it. And I think that's kind of the concept when people say, you know, in social justice issues, that like if you see your well-being as being tied to our most vulnerable communities' well-being, you know, that's really what justice is all about, is like being able to understand that and to care at that level before it's affecting you, right? To see them as you, an extension of you in some ways. Anyway, I know that gets us a little deep, but I think, you know, it's like, in the environmental space, I think environmentalists, you know, traditional environmentalists care about, you know, single-use plastics and not wasting things, right? Not throwing things away that could be reused or recycled or upcycled. And it's like the same thing with our people. You know, we can't just throw people away, whether that's behind bars or in communities, you know, that are just going to be stuck in poverty and lack opportunity, that it's about empathy. It's about second chances and creating a future that's better for everyone.
Amen.
Definitely. So how does Green for All deal with all of this?
How are we doing it? Yeah. Well, look, I think it's really exciting because we're at this like really historic moment in time where, yes, climate change is a big problem. We need to reduce pollution overall. Or we're going to keep having all this extreme weather that we're seeing, right? Which is causing wildfires that are destroying communities. It's causing superstorms.
We both had our houses flood last year. Yeah. So
Yeah.
I mean, people are just – the freeze that you saw in Texas, right? I mean, these are things that are unheard of. And so we definitely want to cut pollution. But it's the same pollution that's actually causing health issues and stuff like that in our communities that is warming the planet. And so it's good to tackle that stuff. But we have the federal government now has authorized $369 billion, with a B, dollars to actually tackle this issue and to tackle it locally. And so those funds are specifically for climate investment. It's things like home weatherization to help bring down the cost of energy and make homes more efficient. It's things like clean transportation for neighborhoods. So that can be anything from, you know, more buses and trains and things like that, to micro-mobility, like you see the electric scooters, electric bikes, or bike paths and things like that, that make cities more walkable, livable, and accessible in terms of getting people to reach jobs, healthcare, education, and so forth. It's doing things like, you know, it can do things like build affordable housing near transit-oriented development, and all of these sorts of things that cut pollution, but also, frankly, just like reduce the quality or the cost of living and increase the quality
help
of life.
People.
Yeah. And it will create jobs too. And so I think that there's a lot of exciting opportunity. When I think about how a lot of the negative issues we talk about affect poor people, I think about how people became poor. And so I go back to sort of the concept of redlining, right? Back in the day when banks and financial institutions would literally pull out maps and draw mm-hmm. with red marker or red pen. This is how it got the name redlining, because mm-hmm. They literally drew red lines around the neighborhoods that they weren't going to invest in. And so if you were a bank, right, if you did set up shop there, you might set up an ATM so people can come and so-called bank with you, right, where they would give you your money and they can access cash or whatever. But that's really them giving you your money, because we know banks then invest money in stocks and things like that, and it makes them wealthy. What they wouldn't do was give small business loans, home ownership loans, and things like that. And it was the same thing. These were often, you know, black and brown communities. And so it was almost like deciding who was going to be poor. And obviously we have, you know, laws and stuff now that say, okay, you can't do that. But what do we do in the meantime, right? When we've basically locked people out from having financial access and resources, we have to do the opposite. Like, the antidote to that is investment. The antidote to disinvestment and extraction is investment, right? And so because we have this $369 billion worth of climate investment available, the Dream.org Green for All campaign is working to make sure that those dollars actually reach the people and places that need it the most. So we're talking about the most pollution burdened communities. We're talking about, you know, communities in poverty who could use local jobs, right? Who could use solutions that tackle both climate change and create housing solutions that create mobility and transportation solutions. And so that's what we're doing. We do it both through a bottom-up and top-down approach. So we work at the federal level and with states on the design of the program. So usually with that much money, there's an application process, right, for like how to get those dollars. We work with the policymakers to make sure that the policies are designed so that they do prioritize the people and places that need it the most. And then we work with the communities to make sure that they can identify projects that can compete and to develop projects that are ready to apply for funds through our transformative communities work. And so it's very exciting. We have a monthly newsletter that community partners can join, and we provide news and information and resources on sort of how to get those dollars for your community. And what we hope to do is basically interrupt this system, right? We hope to create, yeah, disrupt the sort of current system of poverty and pollution and create new opportunities.
I love that.
And that will have a ripple effect into the justice sector as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do have a question, because this all sounds very hopeful and I love it, because sometimes when I look at climate issues, it almost seems like it's kind of one of those things that feels too big to tackle if I look mm-hmm. at it for too long. Mm-hmm. And I like that this is kind of taking different approaches in different ways through the communities that are affected. I love that. How do we reconcile all these great things, right, that we could potentially be doing? And I know when we've talked to Dream Corps in the past, it's very much actually Nisha mm-hmm. has a find common ground approach. Mm-hmm. What common ground can we find?
Are you
find?
About to mention the debate last yes, night?
I am. What common ground can we find when we have a group of people who are still not admitting that, one, climate change is real, and then two, that climate change is caused by human activity? Like, where, mm-hmm. how do we have common ground with that?
Yeah,
I like
yeah.
having common ground with people too. I'm just,
look, the way I like
struggling to find it.
Yeah, the way I like to think about it, I think, you know, even after the 2016 election, depending on what side of the political spectrum you are, right, was depressing for a lot of people. And I think folks started keying in on awful people, like, oh, it's really, really bad. There's all these opinions out there that are so the opposite of the world we want to create. Like you're saying, even for climate change, you focus on the people who deny climate change, who think that, you know, who are just living in like not reality, right? And we spend so much time and attention on them, I think, because that's what grabs headlines. And so those are the stories that we see all the time. But I actually think that the problem is not an awful people problem. It's an awesome people problem. There's actually more people who do agree that this needs to be tackled And maybe disagree on the solutions, maybe have different ideas about what's possible, right? It's a multi, I mean, it's such a big problem. You need like multiple approaches. So there's room for all of that, you know? And some may just not know where to start, you know, or what they can do. Like you said too, it can feel big and overwhelming. And so if you feel like anything you do isn't good enough, then you might not even get started. And so not everyone can do everything, but there is something everyone can do. And I will say from firsthand experience working with some conservatives, there are actually a lot of folks who have shifted, who have moved, who've been more willing to publicly share. And I would say privately, probably always had this opinion that climate change is real, that we need to do something. Mm-hmm. But we're, you know, scared to maybe go against their party. You're seeing more of them actually stepping out and speaking up and saying, okay, we need to do something about this. Sometimes the Democrats and Republicans just have different ways of doing it, right? I think what I've seen generally is like Democrats want to say, okay, we've got to solve this problem. So let's set a big audacious goal to reduce our carbon emissions or to, you know, spend, you know, a certain amount of investment in tackling the problem. What I found is sometimes on the Republican side, they care a lot more about the details. You know, they want to know all the specifics of how before they'll commit to a big goal. So it's almost like a personality difference, mm-hmm. a little bit, you yeah. see. That's not insurmountable. You know, we actually need all of that stuff. So when we talk about electric vehicles, for instance, the fact that, you know, Republicans are bringing up that, hey, these battery mineral, like the minerals that you mine for the batteries are actually coming from some countries that aren't really allied with the United States is kind of a concern. You know, it's kind of, it's kind of a real concern. And so I don't think that it's as simple as saying, you know, we've got all the answers and they don't.
Right. Or, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I see hope, I guess.
Okay. That's good.
You're giving me hope.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It was just tough watching because we did watch the 8 contenders last night in the debate. And obviously, whenever this gets released, this is after the first debate. And just, it's so disheartening to hear that, like, I guess I try not to get too much into, like, you know, the headline grabbing. I'm like I try to be very anti just clicking on articles because of the headlines or just believing, because on both sides, right? Both sides, 99% of the time, like whatever the headline is, isn't necessarily accurate.
Right.
Both sides of media do it. Absolutely. And so I try and look for facts before I'm like jumping to conclusions. But it was a little disheartening.
A man screaming that climate change is a hoax on national television. So.
Yes. So I just didn't know we were still there until I watched last night. And I was like, oh, okay. We're still having this debate.
It was
disheartening.
It's hard. But look, I really believe we create the future. And sadly, I do think the sort of big personalities on television and some of these candidates that are just a little more out there influence people's behavior. It's easy. It's like celebrity culture too, right? Like
yeah,
you start to have an affinity to someone or whatever, and you kind of are in team this or team that. But I think that if we can just remember that that who we really are, like who we really are, I think that some of the transformative community projects, like I was talking about, like being able to get together with people in your community to say, what do we want to solve our city's issues?
Yeah.
Is like a place where common ground can be found, because when you really talk to people about what it's really about, there is actually more in common than that people have. And again, back to the othering, right? Like being a Democrat or being a Republican doesn't actually also make you all these other things.
Right.
Me being, you know, Mexican, I don't speak Spanish fluently. Although you might think like, oh, you're Mexican, you need to speak Spanish or something like that. Like there are so many examples of people who, because of their race or their zip code or those things in combination, or their religion or their political affiliation, right, get interpreted or understood as something. And how often have you felt misunderstood?
We live in Florida, so people have this stereotype about us because we live in Florida.
There you go, right? There you go.
And it's like, no.
Yeah, I still look. I still one of my fondest memories working with some conservatives was this meeting this guy who worked at Heritage Foundation, a very conservative think tank, and finding out that he actually goes to the same vegan bagel shop as our policy director at the time, because you don't usually have an image of this like Republican white male who eats like vegan bagels. Isn't the vegan stuff right supposed to be for those hippie coastal elites? Like, that's just the story. But the reality is, like, it would be unrealistic to think that no conservative is also vegan or gluten free or likes granola, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it's just, I think, more complicated, you know, more complicated than that. And so when finding common ground, the number one tip I would give people is to start human and to stay human, right? To show up as a person and to, you know, allow the other person in front of you to occur for you as a person.
Yeah, that's good advice. I like that. Start human, stay human. I think that's good advice.
I was going to lean towards the aliens here any day now. So I was just going to give up hope for humanity altogether and beg them to take me.
Are you? Yeah, I was going to say, are you in the camp of we're already living in a simulation?
Like, I'm not in the camp, but I've been listening.
I know we kind of talked, we touched on it a little bit. How do you feel like Green for All and the basically social climate justice all connects with formerly incarcerated and all of that?
Yeah. Well, there are many things. There are many things. One of the main things I like to talk about is the talent and the genius. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about these issues, we talk about our communities from a disadvantaged perspective, and we overlook that there is a lot of talent and genius in our communities, and that includes a lot of talent and genius in our prisons, right? And so when I talk to you about these $369 billion worth of climate investment, it's going to create a projected 900,000 new jobs, 900,000 new jobs over this next decade. We don't even have the workforce now. Like, we actually don't have the skilled workers that we need to do all of these infrastructure projects. And so there's a huge opportunity then to look at your untapped talent and to create, you know, green job pathways, like out of prison into jobs, right? And so thinking about those kinds of programs in the prisons now, and then also reentry programs that can help people with a job when they come out, which is one of the number one things that they need, right? To prevent recidivism. It's like the hardest thing to do. So we have to make sure we're removing the barriers in this new economy that, you know, something like a prior record doesn't actually bar people from contributing. If we could take the people who most need work and put them to work doing the jobs that most need done, I mean, we fight poverty and pollution there. So one thing that I wanted to share is we do actually have scholarships available for people. We do not discriminate based on criminal record. There's a current cycle open. And so if your listeners text DREAM, the word DREAM, to 97483, they can get on our list and they'll be sent basically the webpage that shows all of our opportunities. On there's our scholarships along with some other different ways to plug into our work. The scholarships are for, I think, $3,500. And they can go toward any sort of job training, upskilling, or project to help basically get onto a green career pathway. And so you can kind of use it for whichever programs you find. And I highly encourage it. I think the last cycle we had was something like 20% of our recipients were formerly incarcerated.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So cool.
So that's one, yeah, that's one opportunity. The other is, you know, obviously to start a business and think about entrepreneurship. We've been working a lot with entrepreneurs and innovators, both in the justice tech space and in the climate tech space, trying to help people really who, you know, again, we believe like if you're close to the problem, you see the solutions differently, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have different ideas, different approaches, your lived experience contributes like a new way of thinking about the problem. And I really believe we need all of that at the table to unlock the true like possibilities for how we tackle these big issues. So we've got a Justice Innovation Prize that we're awarding in October, and there are a bunch of cool companies that you can check out who are in the running for that. So in October, we'll be making the announcements. And then our Climate Tech Launchpad, right now we're working with 10 different entrepreneurs. They are all Black or Latinx. 70% of them are women. And they're going to be having a demo day also in October. So we're really excited to showcase their work as well and just use the power of technology to help solve both like mass incarceration.
It really is all connected.
Yeah. Create a decarceration industry and then like also build an inclusive green economy.
Yes.
Wow.
Little things. That's all we work on. Little things now.
You're like
dream.org, right? Right there in the name. Big dreams.
Wow.
That's so cool.
So impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. I think, you know, folks in prison, yeah, I didn't talk about this, but folks in prison are like sitting ducks sometimes with some of these extreme weather events, you know?
Oh, we have folks we don't have air conditioning here for most of our prisons. What if we went to the summit and there was like two prisons that have air conditioning?
And something I think it's not even like the whole facilities either. It's like portions of the facility.
If you're in a special program, if you're like lucky to get accepted into one of their programs that they have, there's air conditioning. But yeah, we've been seeing the news reports of people who are incarcerated in Texas that are suffering heat strokes or dying from heat. So they definitely are sitting ducks. They can't move anywhere. So there's that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to get folks from the community thinking about, you know, one of these like transformative community plans. How do you incorporate the prison into your plan? Are there ways these climate investment dollars could, you know, help weatherize and make these, you know, buildings a little more resilient and comfortable and things like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And if people think, you know, even if people are coming out of like, because I hear a lot of people say when we try to talk about this stuff, like, oh, well, you shouldn't have committed a crime, then, you know, whatever their rhetoric is, you know, so if you're of that mindset, even just, okay, make it better for the people who work there, then that's where we're going. So, because the guards are also,
you can't see the prisoners as people.
Right. I know. Whatever reason, I know. And this is how you find common ground. True. It's true. You might not get them to care for the same reason you care, but you might find a different way to get them to care.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So what do you see as the biggest, you probably get this a lot, but what do you see as like the biggest climate issues affecting everybody at this point in time? Or is it a little bit of everything?
The biggest issues, I mean, I think you spoke to it a little bit, I wouldn't say apathy, but despair, right? That I think among people who really do care and want to do something, or maybe you have kids or something at home, and so you just worry more, you know? Not knowing what to do. Like I said, the awesome people problem, right? Not knowing what you can do. So I think that prevents people from getting started. And Alice Walker has a great quote on this, right? That the most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. Mm-hmm. And again, goes back to we create the future. So you might not know how to get some of these climate investments. You might not know how to transform your community, but if that's something you're interested in doing, our community newsletter, right, can actually give you those tools and information to get started, that roadmap, right, the getting started guide. And it only takes some initiative to connect with local leaders and say, hey, what are we doing? Let's get a plan together. Because a lot of folks aren't going to do that. And the money, I'm telling you, is going to go to those who show up and apply. Who's going to show up and apply, right? And so, you know, that's one way. Or if you've ever thought about making a career pivot, you know, we're going to need a lot of people to build a green economy. And so that's one way, right? It's like, maybe you're not going to start a community project. Maybe what you can do is make sure that the hours that you're spending at work in some job, because we all got to work them, that those hours that you're spending are also going toward building that future. And so, and that can be anything, right?
There's for our lawyer listeners, Earth Justice is a great organization. If you're a lawyer, Earth Justice, they fight climate issues and they partner with a lot of great organizations. So you can spend your time that way. Literally any job field.
Yeah. Any job field. Christy Dretman has a green jobs board on Instagram. I think it's just at Green Jobs Board too. And so there's a listing there, but there's a few different places like that that are starting to pull together green job listings. Nick at Noon is another one. He's often putting out on a Substack. He has a Substack, Nick at Noon. And he's always writing lists about different sorts of jobs in the industry and stuff as well. And then again, the Dream.org scholarship can help get you, you know, any training that you might need to make that pivot.
That's so cool. So I know you've mentioned the community newsletter. What are some other ways that, you know, okay, say, you know, Amanda and I are working elsewhere, but we have a little bit of time we want to devote to helping climate change. What could we do, or our listeners?
Yeah, I think also letting your local leaders know what you want to see, right? Do you want more money for electric school buses, for instance? You know, that would be another one that if you're a parent and you're engaged at your school, figuring out how you can get them to convert to electric school buses. That's about sending in a letter, showing up maybe to a local school board meeting, right? And making sure that the next time they buy these school buses, that they're buying zero emission buses so that your kid is riding a bus that isn't going to fill their little tiny baby developing lungs with all this particulate matter. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these are things I've learned, right? Like I said, I didn't start out as an environmentalist, but that tailpipe pollution has all these tiny, tiny particulate matter. And if you got the windows open on the bus, especially, that's just going in and it never comes out. That's something I didn't know. That those little particles gross. That you can't see, they go into their lungs and they just build. They build over our lifetime.
You just so, unlocked a new fear in my brain.
Yeah, it's really dangerous for younger kids. Yeah, I know. I'm always thinking when I'm going through the parking lots too, because my daughter's eight. They say that just your height even, so this is why kids are more affected by it. So if you're in a parking structure, parking lot, and there's just obviously cars that haven't turned them off yet or whatever, it's just they're constantly at a lower level, closer to the tailpipe. I know. I can see your face. I see your face. So anyway, electric school buses is like one very tangible thing. if you're engaged at your school or if you're engaged at church, like, you know, figuring out how your church could become a climate resiliency center, you know, or how even that they can weatherize so that they bring down the costs, you know, of their energy bill, or be a resource hub for educating families on how they can access some of these other assistance programs so that they can weatherize their homes, or they can get, you know, these rebates and incentives and stuff to get electric vehicles and things like that. So wherever, I think what makes it sustainable, talking about sustainability, it only works, right? Getting involved in this stuff only works if you integrate it in ways that make sense for you. So wherever you're at, if it's in your workplace, your school, your church, you work at a prison. I mean, I think if the guards actually brought it up, right? As opposed to like prison rights activists talking about the need to improve the prison conditions, that might land differently. So basically, yeah, wherever you are, if it's your workplace, school, church, community, you know, wherever you're engaged, you can start there.
Definitely. If our listeners could take one thing from your interview, what do you want it to be?
I think that, you know, the same mindsets really that have us discarding people and locking up the keys and leaving them in prison, not thinking about second chances, not having empathy, right, is the same mindset that leaves our communities with poverty and pollution. And so I really think it starts with that. And so in the spirit of building common ground, you know, there's something everyone can do, but it starts with us. Mm-hmm. I think challenging our own mindset and where we're othering, where we're contributing to the divide, mm-hmm. right, in our own ways. Mm-hmm. I think that's the hardest thing to undo, but it is in our control. It's fully in our control. And the second thing is just, you know, again, not everyone can do everything, but there is something that everyone can do. So choose the domain that you're going to do it in. If it's work, school, your community or church, whatever that is, whatever your domain is, and influence in that space.
You know, every time somebody from Dream.org is here, I feel so much better about humanity at the end of our interviews.
I agree.
You guys are doing such great work. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank definitely. You. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here and happy to share about our work.
Yay. Well, I'm so glad we had someone from the Green for All sector come on because, yeah, I guess I knew it was connected, but I really didn't. And so thank you so much for putting that in perspective. And thank you for the work that you're doing. All right, guys. And if you enjoyed hearing about Green for All, you can go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. And we will see you next week on Gin and Justice.
All editing for Gin and Justice done by Gin and Justice Podcast.
Artwork by Justin Cardone. Photography by Kimber Schwakey.
We'll see you next time on Gin and Justice.